You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsoccer.com. Powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scars. We are coming to you on the evening of Monday, February 18th, 2019. We've got a great show for you today. Daniel Sperry, my good friend, my good co-host. I've got a fever, and only CONCACAF Champions League can cure it.
Yeah, man. So speaking of that, it was kind of funny. Last night, I was at a concert, and we went to go see Young the Giant, drove to Columbia, Missouri. Watch Young the Giant. I'm a big Young the Giant fan. Killer show. But it's funny, the lead singer has, like, on his mics, so he has two mics that he used. One is just a normal mic. The second one is, like, a special effects one. And he's got, like, a little computer thing set up to it so he can change through the effects and shuffle through the little things that he's got going on. That and the filters that it kind of runs that mic. But also on this mic stand is a wood block, a cowbell, and like a bunch of like random ass like auxiliary percussion. And so like in the middle of like one of the songs, and it's like stuff that they actually do in the album, but like he just like whip a drumstick out of nowhere and just be like, and then just start hitting like these little offbeats and these little licks on the cowbell and stuff. And so it's kind of funny because the first time we did it, like my friends that I went with, we all looked at each other like, oh yeah, more cowbell. But anyways, I have a fever for Champions League. Yes, my goodness, man. I'm quite excited for it because it actually means like tomorrow I get to watch an MLS team play a competitive game, and that makes me really, really happy. And for the next 3 days, I'll get to do it. So that's really fun. I'm looking forward to that. Even if it is Toronto FC, even if it is Houston, I expect both teams, we'll get into the matchups, obviously, but I expect both teams to do well in that. It's going to be, I am quite happy that this is going the way that it is. It's going to be a lot of fun to tune into this, and I will get to go to the game on the 21st here in Kansas City between Sporting Kansas City and Toluca.
Very exciting, Dan. We'll get into CCL, but first I think we have to talk about the news of today. It was announced earlier today that Orlando City SC has come to a deal with Nani, a former winger of Manchester United, most recently with Sporting CP, I believe, in the Portuguese First Division, Venezuelan, Colombian international. I can't remember off the top of my head. In any case, he was with Manchester United for the better part of a decade. Portuguese, excuse me.
Yeah, that's why we call him Ronaldo Light.
Oh, right. Well, I guess, wouldn't he be the dark chocolate version of Ronaldo? Anyways, three-year-old designated player, winger. Dan, we saw this and I thought, his age, given the penchant for what I think Orlando City needs, everything else that, in my opinion, they haven't really done this offseason. I don't really like this signing, and I don't really like the direction Orlando City's going in general. Your thoughts on this move? I mean, at the very least, like, you know, two guys who, you know, care about, you know, the Red Devils, we'll get to see a guy who we have fond memories of in our, you know, earlier years playing in MLS. So that's a positive, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of cool to get to see. Like, I remember when I got to do, I had to do an interview with the Fire when they were in Kansas City, and I got to talk to Bastian. That was crazy for me, because like that was like a childhood idol, and then ended up going to Manchester United, and so that was a whole lot of fun. Seeing Zlatan was really cool, but like we really haven't had like massive Manchester United stars come through. And Wayne Rooney wasn't here yet when DC United came through town last season. And Nani won't come to town for Sporting Kansas City this year. They will go to Orlando City. However, for just like this signing in a vacuum by itself, you just make the statement without any other background and say Orlando City signed Nani. He's 32 years old. He's been doing well in Portugal. He has a solid goal scorer, and a can be a solid wide presence. considering who Nani was and has always been very physical and like fast and keeps himself in really good shape. He may not be what he was at 25 years old when he was just burning, you know, fullbacks and in the English Premier League constantly, and getting in behind defenses. However, he's still going to have that physicality behind him that I think will allow him to do well in MLS. Now, you remove this from the, like, get rid of the vacuum. And you take into account everything that's happening with Orlando City. I said this in our group chat, and I'll say it again. I said it on Twitter, too, when the rumors first started coming out, was like throwing Nani, who there's interesting things about him with Manchester United locker room-wise, and stuff between him and Ronaldo as well, with the Portuguese national team and stuff like that. He to throw that into... the heavily volatile situation that is Orlando City and has been Orlando City for like the last two seasons. I don't know if this is a great use of funds. Like, they could have gone out and split what they've spent to acquire Nani and what they'll pay on his salary, split that between two fullbacks and instantly put themselves into the playoffs. I think the offense is there for them, but the defense is just absolutely disgusting and terrible. And if they actually invested into the right parts, they'd be fine. But they continue to invest in a Kaká who was a waste. As cool as it was to have him in there on field, it was by and large a waste. And now you're going to bring in an older Nani for likely a very significant amount of money. He is a DP and is a hard DP, so you can't use Tam to try and buy him down. I mean, I think that's a very hard thing and a not smart situation for Orlando's, kind of interesting. And I'll leave it at this, is I wonder who pulled the strings on this or asked for a move like this. Because you look at Luis Musi coming over from FC Dallas over to Orlando. You know, that is not a FC Dallas type move to go get a 32-year-old foreign big name just for the sake of having a foreign big name. You know, that never fit their MO. So a lot of the moves that he was making when he first showed up at Orlando City were moves that you would have expected out of an FC Dallas run team that was being smart with their money and how they spread out the budget across the roster and making smart depth additions as well. So they have at least one or two decent options at every single position. To throw in all this cash on Nani just kind of seems out of there. So it's interesting throwing him into a volatile situation already. It's interesting considering this is not their biggest area of need, and it's very, very interesting considering that, you know, this does not seem to be a move that maybe Luis Musi would have pulled off with FC Dallas, and every indication that we had gotten earlier in the year was something that he would have. That was something that he would have done with Dallas. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if it works. They sure, at least for like the first 5 weeks, they're definitely going to be like an MLS Live, like must watch team, just to kind of check out and see, like, is it just going to be a dumpster fire or is it actually going to work? Who knows?
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying there, Dan. I guess, you know, like, this is just, for me, this is Orlando doubling down on offense. And I mean, if they're going to make it to the playoffs, like, they're going to have to win every game 4-3 and then score like 70 goals. And then even then, I'm still not sure they're going to have, a goal differential greater than like plus 10 in the net of it. I guess I agree with your sentiment that really hit home about questioning who made this move of, was this an ownership sort of a thing to try and maybe appeal to the Euro snob, simply to sell jerseys, you know, was, you know, has the shine of Dom Dwyer worn off just because the shine it's on the, you know, being an expansion team, but it also being a team that's been not successful on the field kind of worn off? Was this maybe a statement almost similar to how, you know, the team hasn't really spent huge sums of money on a singular player since the Kaká signing, and he was their first one and their DP going back to their inaugural year when they were still at the Citrus Bowl, now camping World Stadium. So there's a couple of things that are factoring in here. I guess my big question is, I'm wondering if this James O'Connor comes in. Obviously, the team was a dumpster fire at that point, but you saw how terribly they finished. And I just wonder, you know, if you're a Sasha Kljestan, if you're a Dom Dwyer, and you're used to being coached by big coaches in the league who have a who had a pedigree both as players and as coaches in American soccer. Obviously, you know, Dom Dwyer wasn't going to come there thinking that he's hot stuff and be anything other than exactly what Peter Vermes wanted him to be. Obviously, Sasha Kljestan, most of his experience was with Jesse Marsh at, you know, Chivas USA and then at New York Red Bulls. You know, I just wonder, you think, oh, you've got a guy coming in here, you know, who won two USL Cups playing on a sock, you know, playing on a baseball field. Excuse me. You know, how do they view him, and how, in the context of how poorly the team played, are they taking him seriously from a managerial standpoint? And then I just wonder, you know, if you're Nani coming in thinking, you know, I played for Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, the theater of dreams, I'm going to come in here and this is my team. You know, how seriously do you take that guy? You know, one of the reasons why, you know, you see how the trend has been with coaches signings in MLS. They've typically been international guys, or they've been guys who have pedigrees in MLS. You know, your middle tier middling manager isn't getting a run at three or four jobs in a row without having to build up and do something else. You know, Caleb Porter walking into Columbus Crew with an MLS Cup ring that he won on the backs of beating the Columbus Crew at Matt Free Stadium. That carries cachet both for players within the league and players potentially coming to MLS who don't know that much about the league. I just have to wonder, you know, I remember offhand, you know, like Zlatan maybe saying some, this is prior to him stepping down and obviously him dying, Siggy Smit, rest in peace, but you know making some comments where maybe he didn't necessarily respect Siggy, or he just had certain opinions about him. And why did, no matter who the European coach, European player, walk into the LA Galaxy and immediately have respect for Bruce Arena? Because he had won for the U.S. men's national team, he had won within the league, and then whenever that next DP, you know, had a big question and they were talking to current Galaxy players, former Galaxy players, David Beckham, Robbie Keane, Landon Donovan, go down the list, everybody had nothing but amazing things to say about Bruce Arena. So even if you're, you know, even if you're Steven Gerrard walking in thinking, you know, oh, I won Champions League with Liverpool and everything, walking in like, you know, Bruce Arena, you're going to have to respect, or you're going to have to understand what guys who you respect say about him. And I just wonder, you know, nobody from Louisville City is getting a call from Nani's agent right now asking whether or not to respect James O'Connor. So it's an interesting situation. I agree with you. They're going to be an MLS Live team, but it might be an MLS Live team in the sense that, like, you go watch a NASCAR race to wait for the crash. Let's get on to CCL, Dan. And let's start with, I think, the two teams probably in the best position to actually maybe win this thing, and two teams that, save for Miguel Marone's departure, you know, had a very consistent transition in terms of the roster from last year to this year. I am, of course, talking about Atlanta United FC, the defending MLS Cup champions, and then the steady hand in the Western Conference, Peter Vermes this morning, Kansas City. I'll leave it to you to talk about the Sporting side in terms of their situation with Toluca, but where do you see these two teams in terms of how seriously they're going to take the tournament and really their opportunity to be that first MLS team to win CONCACAF Champions League in the current format?
Yeah, so, I mean, I it's going to be interesting to see how they take this tie. For Sporting KC, at least, they understand that the second leg is going to be a real task. Having played one competitive game and then being asked to go play at 9,000 feet is extremely difficult, especially when you are in full preseason form. That is a tough one. You know, it's different than Colorado, where Colorado, you know, they go train. They don't really train much at altitude and worry about that. They actually like doing the cold start, getting in the night before and then going in, and they don't do a whole lot of extra prep work, because places like Colorado, like Salt Lake City, at least their findings are, once you get past the first 10 minutes, you're usually pretty good. Your second wind kicks in and you're fine. That's pretty much what every single player that I've ever talked to about that. However, 9,000 feet is very, very different. I'm sure you can attest to it, but, you know, the difference between Denver, and then going, let's say, up to like Independence Pass or something like that is a place that it is hard to breathe. You get into the Rocky Mountain National Park as well. But you know, you get 9,000-10,000 feet, Pikes Peak-ish. That's very difficult to breathe at if you are not used to that. So it'll be interesting to see. They will be training at altitude before the second leg. However, we are talking about the first leg, and I believe they're going to give a full shot for the first leg, 100%. And I think kind of depending on the result, with having the season opener against LAFC being that weekend, as you know, on from the second leg, will kind of enter, will be how we see how that'll show how serious Sporting KC takes it, because I think they will, they'll put out the best possible lineup they can for this first leg. Second leg will be very interesting, and I think some, well, you'll see a little bit of rotation based on what kind of a result they would need out of that. And if they need to go all for it in Toluca, then you'll just see a second choice lined up in LA, which will be interesting. Atlanta, however, I think they're going to be in the same kind of a boat, but luckily they have a much easier matchup. Herediano away will be tough for them, but you've got so many players on that roster that have played in extremely hostile environments in South America, and as much respect as I have for Herediano and the atmosphere that is created by most of the Costa Ricans, you know, Saprissa is always a tough place to go play. Herediano and Alajuelense is another one that has been historically very difficult for MLS teams to go play in. So when Atlanta does go there, it will be interesting. However, I expect Atlanta's home crowd and home, you know, first leg to do a lot of the damage. And then with so much experience that they have, and I think the way they took the playoffs really in last year was just being able to kind of to frustrate teams and sit on the counter, force them to attack them when they, that is where Atlanta playing at through the playoffs last year. It is a different manager. However, the players are the same. They kind of went through all the same thing. Like I said, there's a lot of guys on that roster that played in some extremely hostile South American environments that I, you know, as much as I rate a nice Saprissa or Herediano home match in terms of environment, there's nothing like what, you know, what
a PD Martinez match at Uruguay.
Yeah, or like what PD Martinez was going through in like the, you know, the Copa Libertadores final. I mean, like there's nothing like that. Even in some of the Buenos Aires derbies between River Plate and not just Boca Juniors. I mean, those are crazy intense atmospheres. So I think they'll be up to the task for that road setup. That's always the biggest thing, I think, for the MLS teams, because a lot of teams always have that advantage. You know, MLS crowds are loud, are strong. A lot of these Central American teams are traveling a long, long ways to come, some of them into terrible weather, like it will be, you know, below freezing for Sporting KC and Toluca. You know, those kind of things will make these matchups interesting for that home leg. And then that second leg is always going to be, you know, what is the task that is at hand for either Atlanta or Sporting Kansas City in that second leg. But you know, Sporting's had an extra week of preseason. They looked really, really good last Wednesday night. I have, you know, it seems like Atlanta's just been blowing people out all preseason. Although I did see they did take one loss, I think, but it was kind of after all the first teamers switched out. But, you know, Sporting blew through Houston the other day. Looked really, really good with a kind of a mix of first and second choice guys, or guys you would assume would be first and second choice. But, you know, I it's going to be really fun for these first legs, and you know, hopefully these two really kind of set them, kind of distance themselves in that first leg and give themselves a real good shot.
Before I give my spiel on Atlanta, Dan, just to ask Weatherman Dan, is there any expected precipitation this week at Sporting Park?
There is actually Tuesday night, so it's funny. I think Toluca is coming into town. I don't know when. Smart enough and got their flights bumped up to tomorrow sometime during the day, or morning, or are coming in tonight, because we're expecting, I believe, between 4 to 8 inches of snow overnight Tuesday into Wednesday. And then Wednesday is their training day at their, you know, before media training day at the stadium. So Sporting KC, I know, are getting back into town tonight, I believe, and then going straight out and doing training tomorrow at the stadium and stuff like that. So I don't know where Toluca are at on that, but you know, there's no precipitation in the forecast for Thursday. I kind of wish there was, because I'd love to see Orange Ball CONCACAF Madness. However, it is still going to be very, very cold. I think Peter Vermees has said something about, like, oh, it's going to be 29 for the game. And he's like, I hope it's colder, was kind of his response. So, you know, it's going to be fun.
Let's get to, so my take on Atlanta, Dan, I agree with everything you say that certainly they have the players, whether it's the MLS experienced veterans who aren't going to shy away from these kind of atmospheres. You know, I look at Michael Parker's playing in a few games, you know, with the U.S. Men's National Team. You know, he knows what CONCACAF looks like. Jeff Lorena was going back to his days, you know, with Rapids Thug Life is going to know what that's like. Any of the various Central and South American players they've had who've played at any level internationally for club and country, or even just in the first division across a diverse league, you know, they're not going to shy away from that. And I would even extend that through to a potential second round matchup against Monterrey and then any other Liga MX teams as well, in terms of understanding what the atmosphere, the climate is going to be like, the travel, you know, the fire alarm being pulled at your hotel, you know, at 2 a.m, or, you know, drums going all night and what that looks like. Maybe not quite at the level from a skill standpoint in terms of playing other teams. Certainly, Jose Martinez and his experiences with the national team playing against an Argentina, a Brazil, he'll be familiar with that level, but maybe just not at the club level consistency across that we'll see from some of the potential League MX opponents that Atlanta could be playing. But certainly for this first leg, you know, they're far more talented, definitely well prepared to play Herediano, and they've all experienced at an individual level. I kind of wonder, typically the teams that have done well in this tournament or who've made it to a final are ones who previously went through this kind of experience together. And Atlanta obviously hasn't gone through any international competition as a club together. So I just kind of wonder if maybe, you know, they need to experience it together in order to experience it, rather than all kind of having similar but related and experiences at various levels throughout their careers in order to understand it. That said, I think from a defensive standpoint, they're certainly very well prepared for it. I think the only real question is in whatever's going on in the midfield with Ezequiel Barco and Pity Martinez replacing the massive void left by Miguel Almiron's departure. You know, are they going to be able to provide enough surface for Jose Martinez to do his thing? Certainly against Herediano, I think they'll be able to do that. Are they going to be able to do that, you know, in the 110th minute with, you know, away goals in effect at Monterrey? That is still a question that I have of pretty much any MLS team until I actually physically see them do it. You know, Toronto FC and New York Red Bulls of last year, absolutely, I thought that they were capable of doing that. Pretty much anybody else outside of that one, I think 2013 Montreal team, I have serious doubts about. So I'm very confident in what Atlanta's going to be able to do against Herediano, cautiously optimistic about what they're going to be doing after that until I physically see what they do when they get punched in the mouth by CONCACAFing or by a League MX team on the road. Let's move on to two other teams who I would say are certainly in the mix for this tournament, Dan, but are very different from the iteration of the team that made a run at this trophy last year. I'm talking about the New York Red Bulls and Toronto FC. We've documented both in writing and on this podcast about the kind of whirlwind that has taken place in Toronto FC ever since the front office shifts happened last month, maybe 2 months ago. And then now you look at the various exits they've had over, you know, it seems like almost one every fortnight. And then on the other side, New York Red Bulls, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, as Matt Doyle said on Extra Time Radio today. But, you know, Chris Armas is not Jesse Marsh, and they no longer have Tyler Adams. I still think the New York Red Bulls are still a very sound, together put team that is going to be able to get things done. I think TFC, I think everything is dependent on can Greg Vanney push all of the buttons in the ways that he did last year, and he's doing it with older and I would say less quality pieces than he did last year. Dan, your thoughts on the two red MLS teams in CONCACAF Champions League?
Yeah, I like our Red Bull New York's chances on this one. Toronto FCs are kind of interesting. I haven't looked too far ahead to see like who those second be again. New York and TFC both have, I think, I mean, Toronto FC still has a decent squad. Luckily, they will have a relatively easy first matchup against Independiente, the Panamanian team, and Red Bull New York will as well against Pantoja FC of the Dominican Republic. Pretty much the tournament minnows, if you will. I would expect both them to get the job done and get through it. They are solid squads. However, they don't strike me as teams that have the overall depth to get it done. You look at Seattle, what happened with Seattle last year, as they got, you know, they got to the semifinals, but they kept losing guys along the way due to injury. And at the end, you know, they were like virtually playing a USL squad, at Chivas to go get to the final, and that wasn't going to work necessarily. So, you know, I think that that right there is going to be the telltale. Does New York stay healthy? Does TFC stay healthy? That's going to be it. So we'll see what New York does, it'll be nice to kind of see how they've attempted to replace Tyler Adams, or have they just said, you know what, we're going to have to do something different because we don't have that anymore. And I would hope that Chris Armas would make the right choice in choosing what to do there. Like I said, this first round should not be too much of a test for either of them. They will have to take it seriously, obviously, but I expect both of these teams to get through this this first round matchup. So we'll see what happens here. I'm intrigued by the New York Red Bulls for sure. TFC as not intrigued by them anymore as I am. I still believe that they'll get the job done in this one, but if you're going to take one of these two and say, man, which one of these would you put within the first group that we just discussed, Atlanta and Sporting Kansas City, I would for sure put Red Bull New York up there. I would almost like TFC and Houston are like dwindling for me, as in the, okay, so they should probably get past their first round matchup, but like, will they go farther than that? Like, will they act? Can they conceivably make the semifinals? And that those two are like massive question marks there for me. Whereas New York, Atlanta, Sporting Kansas City, I expect at least one of them to be in this bit in the semifinals this year around.
I disagree with you on the note about New York Red Bulls not having the depth for this tournament, Dan. I guess the question I would pose to the New York Red Bulls front office in trying to get a better understanding of that is how seriously Chris Armas and company will be taking this tournament. If they're going in all guns blazing, said, you know, we've seen in previous years when they've been in this tournament or fighting a two-fronted battle, you know, if they're trying to really make a run in Open Cup, like I believe, it was them who lost to Sporting Kansas City 2 years ago on the road in Open Cup final, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So, you know, and we've seen in those cases, whether it's Jesse Marsh or Chris Armas, or even going back to Mike Petke, the team be able to roll out effectively a Red Bulls 2 squad and then actually be competitive in MLS. I believe during their Champions League run last year, they had a really cold Saturday night game in which they basically played a Red Bulls 2 team against the Vancouver Whitecaps and then completely walked the Caps off the field, save for, I think, a couple really good plays from the now-departed Alphonso Davies. So I think my question for the New York Red Bulls is, how serious are they taking this tournament, given that they already won Supporters Shield? They've been successful in Supporters Shield. Is that something that they're taking as seriously, or are they more just worried about setting themselves to be in a good position making the playoffs? And in that, I think they'd have a little bit more wiggle room with taking CCL seriously. On the other side, for Toronto FC, we kind of saw, you know, Greg Vanney kind of learned the hard way what happens when you're fighting a two-fronted campaign simultaneously, where similar to the Seattle Sounders, they kind of had a nick and an injury every single way along the way. They went for broke in the final, almost won it, but then ultimately they had nothing. And then because they were effectively playing, you know, a B and a C squad throughout much of the league play, you know, they were already five games behind everybody by the time they turned to look at things, you know, in league. And then at that point, they had so many injuries, they didn't really have any choice but to keep playing that hodgepodge lineup with Michael Bradley having to do everything and Jozy Altidore in and out in the lineup, etc. So my question for both of these teams is how seriously you're taking CCL, given that it's going to stretch further into the regular season. And then in particular for Greg Vanney, how he's going to handle that, given that, you know, that was not managed well from a results standpoint on either side when all things were said and done on that front. I genuinely have to wonder about both of these teams, given the teams that have success in this tournament, Dan. And then in general, this is a general philosophy I have about soccer at the highest level, is that there are a point you need solid coverage everywhere else, but you need a talent man who maybe can single-handedly create something for you when the game's just so stretched and so even, you know, somebody who can just in one single moment take over the game. I look at like the Sebastian Blanco goal in the Western Conference Finals last year. I look at what Jose Martinez is capable of doing. Robbie Keane all those years with the LA Galaxy, for example. And, you know, like, we're one Jozy Altidore hamstring away, I think, from neither of these two teams having one of those talismans. You know, there's pretty good data that Bradley Wright Phillips shrinks in those biggest moments. And the New York Red Bulls defense is only 95% of what it normally is operating at in some of these big moments. And that might not be good enough. Can beat up WP finish one of those chances that he's often missed for the New York Red Bulls? Can Kaku rise to a level higher than what he was last year? And can they find some replacement for the metronome and the chance creation on both sides of the ball that Tyler Adams has given them? And on the other side, you know, you take out Sebastian Giovinco and Victor Vasquez, and you're a significantly weaker offensive team. Don't get me wrong. Jozy Altidore, whether it's CONCACAF Champions League, MLS Cup playoffs, you know, when the chips are down, he has been absolute dynamite for the Reds. But I just genuinely wonder, what else are they going to get other than Jozy? And if something happens to Jozy, or if the defense is just, you know, a little bit older and slower because they're another year older and they're still relatively slow and they had a bunch of injuries last year, I wonder how Toronto FC is going to try and persevere in those moments in the ways that they did at Club America last year, in the way that they certainly did, not at Toluca, at Tigres, for example. You know, all of this for me is ultimately, who do I believe is going to be able to figure it out when the chips are down in an absolute chaos in the 85th minute at Monterrey? And I just don't know that either of those teams are capable of doing that. I think Sporting Kansas City is capable of it. I'm cautiously optimistic that Atlanta United will be able to do that in those moments. I'm not sure I'm confident about any of those four teams. Speaking of teams I'm not confident about winning Champions League, Dan, let's move on to the Houston Dynamo. They will open up their round of 16 in Guatemala against Guastatoya, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Dan, a very CONCACAF-y roster as it is. Wilmer Cabrera will be very familiar with this. Obviously, the Honduran national team players will be very familiar with this, but a really young and a really inexperienced defense and a really inconsistent counterattacking offense. Your thoughts on the Dynamo being back in Champions League for the first time since the Dom Kinnear era, I believe?
Yeah, I actually think that this Dynamo squad actually has like a decent shot of making a run. I love their style of play for knockout tournaments. That's why they ended up winning the US Open Cup. You know, granted, they did go kind of balls to the wall for it. They always put out a first team lineup. They sacrificed in the league for it. And Wilmer Cabrera strikes me as the kind of guy who would do the same thing with the Champions League. They do have a lot of quality and pace up front. Manotas, Kyoto and Albert Elise, manning everything. Is their biggest concern for me. Backline, will be interested to see what their new, center back does. The big thing that we've seen from him so far, was throwing an elbow to a Sounders head, in the preseason and then getting sent off. I believe in the Dynamo's two official preseason matches against MLS squads, they each had a player sent off. I feel like this, they just like are built for CONCACAF, because like if there's any team in MLS that you were sitting there and you're like, man, this is like the most CONCACAF team.
Like, who's Houston. Panama right now? You know, who's the Blas Perez era Panamanian national team? And for me, it's the Houston Dynamo.
Yeah, maybe not so much Honduras, because I think Honduras actually played like solid. They never were like dirty or cheap or chintzy. They just played solid physical counterattacking soccer. However, they do also remind me of a very feisty Guatemalan side as well. That's just kind of how that, like, those kind of teams that, you know, CONCACAF type things, like, always just that's kind of how I see them at times. It is just their style of play. That's how they are. So I actually kind of think they're kind of well built for it, because as some of these teams in CONCACAF are going to try and, you know, get under their skin and be physical, push the referee's limits and stuff like that. I think Houston's the type of team that'll just push right back and be like, yeah, we're not going to get, you know, bounced over like this. So I think it'll be interesting. Their first round matchup, they should get through. There's a lot of quality on this Dynamo roster. I think a lot of people were surprised after making the playoffs and the run that they took, the step backwards that they took in the league. I believe, you know, from what it seems, they've been trying to work on that back line a little bit, getting some health and as a center back pair. Leap Senderos, as low as he is, a very good defender one-on-one and in the air. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this Houston Dynamo team. If you're looking at like, okay, who's going to be the Montreal Impact of this like this year's tournament? Like, Houston are like that team that I would star. They have not shown, in what I've seen in preseason, they have not shown anything that they have learned from the issues that plagued them in all of 2018, which is why I think that, you know, like, that's the other part of it where you sit there and you're like, man, they could have a 2-0 lead. And then they are just as likely to blow it as they are to make it 5-0. So, like, you know, this against this Guastatoya team. So, the Dynamo are like, they're just like 50-50. They're like either going to make a run or they're going to like crash and burn. And so I'm intrigued to see where they're going to be, in this, but like part of me is just like, man, this is a really CONCACAF team. And I think they might actually do well in this.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you, Dan, in the sense that, you know, I think they're definitely a team that's built for the tournament. I just don't know with what's going on in the midfield and as dangerous as their front four attack can be. If you're looking at Kyoto, Minotas, Tomas Martinez and then Albert Elise as dynamic and as attacking they can be, they're a very hot and cold group. And in this sort of tournament, you know, you have one bad first leg and it could all be over for you, especially on the road in Mexico. So I think they'll definitely be okay in this first round. You know, this is, you know, playing, you know, out, you know, 90 minutes outside Guatemala City, if I'm pronouncing, yeah, Guatemala City, the capital of Guatemala, you know, playing, you know, this is child's play to Romel Kyoto and Albert Elise, both from their club and their country experiences playing in CONCACAF. So I'm not worried about that in any stretch, but I just wonder the fact that the team's relatively in preseason, they've made a bunch of changes, albeit ones that I like on the defensive side, that's going to take time to figure out. Still have some question marks in the midfield. You know, is the offense going to be able to outscore a Liga MX opponent with road goals in play over the course of a two-leg series, bearing in mind that, you know, they could have one really, really hot start and then they could have another really cold start. And if they just have one of those cold games when the defense isn't on, or a yellow card goes against them, or a penalty, or CONCACAFing, or, you know, poor refereeing that's going completely against them, I have a feeling like they could absolutely crumble. In an individual game, I'm not sure I'd be betting against them, but I feel just like every single time that they have to go out, just given how their team's built and the inconsistency of their offense, it's just another rolling of the dice that isn't as likely. Whereas they say pretty much every single other team in this tournament from MLS is at least a little bit more consistent from game to game. And in terms of their structure to where I think they're going to be able to build something to plan over 180 minutes, whereas, you know, the Dynamo could be one thing in the first 30 minutes, another thing in the final 45, and who knows what you're going to see by the time the second leg comes around. Excuse me. Dan, let's move on to rapid fire. We've got a couple small little topics to talk about, and then we'll finally get to our first pick-ems in, at least involving an MLS team, I believe, since MLS Cup. So yeah. We'll start with Aaron Long re-signing with the New York Red Bulls. Your thoughts on Eric Long becoming the second of two TAM level center backs for the New York Red Bulls?
Yeah, I mean, it's all like Aaron Long, Tim Parker, two solid center backs, two of the best in the league. They locked him up long term, and good for New York Red Bulls for doing that. You know, I don't know. I expected them to do that. I don't think Aaron Long has had like the prolonged success, necessarily that would command, you know, okay, his contract's coming up. Well, Europe might come calling kind of a thing. I don't think he's quite there yet. Maybe after, let's say he has another close to defender of the year caliber season, then I think the European conversations start going just because of kind of his age. But, you know, it makes sense for him to fit in with this Red Bulls team. And to continue playing here and in the States. And I it's a solid move for him, solid move for the Red Bulls. I really don't, you know, I don't think they would have gone out and found a much better center back for the same price. So, solid work.
Yeah, moving on, this is a little bit of old news as well. Kakure Mane is back in MLS, signing with FC Cincinnati, comes on a free transfer from some team in Switzerland, the name of which I can't remember exactly. And then he also, FC Cincinnati had to acquire his rights from Columbus Crew, who previously held it, sending about $250,000 in total allocation money. That could get bumped up a little bit depending on how Kakure Mane plays and some performance metrics for the 2019 season. I guess the thing that's kind of interesting for me here, Dan, is we officially have, before they even step on the field, we have the first ever player crossover in terms of, I don't know if there's a good term for that, but, you know, the guy to wear the shirt for rural teams. Cucuramane playing for a year with the Columbus Crew and then now playing for FC Cincinnati. You and I obviously like to banter regarding, you know, Landon Donovan and his history with both the San Jose Earthquakes and the LA Galaxy. New York City FC hasn't quite existed long enough for there to be a real, you know, bitter transfer of a player, you know, across the Hudson River, for example. But, you know, I guess Cucuramane is, you know, is the man at the center of, you know, the Hell is Real Derby. I like this move in general in the sense that I think FC Cincinnati's front office is realizing that they need guys with MLS level experience and then maybe experience elsewhere and success elsewhere in order to help stabilize the team as they move in MLS. Obviously, Fernando Adi is going to provide that. Ozzy Alonso, Kendall Waston, I think Cucuramane can certainly bring that. But for me, Dan, Cucuramane is kind of the winger equivalent of Juan Agudelo. For me, you saw all of this potential that he had when he was with the Vancouver Whitecaps and little spurts of really, really good things, but not a full-on performance from game to game or even from season to season. And for me at this point with Cucuramane now in the back half of his 20s, you know, he's no longer a guy with potential. You know, he could get away with those sorts of seasons when he was a 21-year-old playing with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Now at 25, 26, he's just an inconsistent player. You know, the ceiling is still there, but then the bottom is still there and the average is still somewhere in between those. And it's not like if he reaches his potential in terms of being consistent there and then starts to progress on that for the next 2 to 3 years as he enters in his prime, maybe, you know, he can really jump up. For me, that ceiling's not there. So, you know, I think he can certainly be an exciting player. You know, I think the term in England for this is a match of the day player where, you know, if you look over the course of a 5 to 8 minute highlight reel for an individual game, he always stands out or he makes a couple really good plays or he makes one play that makes you go, wow. But then if you watch the entire 90 minutes, you still see that one wow moment, but then don't see the whole thing. So I still have my doubts about Cucuramane, as we've discussed on this program. I still have my doubts and concerns about what FC Cincinnati is going to be, but it's another guy with MLS experience who's going to be familiar with the league, you know, who's not coming in and going to be, you know, total deer in headlights like maybe some of their USL guys could be, as we've seen that take precedent with other USL teams expanding into MLS. Let's move on, Dan. This is our last thing I'll throw to you before we start to talk about MLS jersey releases. What the heck is going on with Darlington Nagbe and Atlanta United, and what do we think about it, and why is it this crazy, Dan?
Yeah, I kind of like, this is MLS's Anthony Davis right here.
Yes.
This is a lot of fun. I mean, does he have a list? And then we'll get some great meet, you know, Rob Ruggeri will go out there and be like, do you have a list? And he's like, no, I don't have a list. But every other report out there has a list. Anyways, I'm laughing kind of at all of this, just, but if you haven't heard the rumors, is that Darlington Nagbe has been holding himself out of games and play for Atlanta United as he tries to force a move to the Columbus Crew to reunite with Caleb Porter. So we'll see if there's even like trade talks between it, or Atlanta's like, no, like, you're not screwing with us, you know, welcome to the team, when you're ready to join, get here, kind of a thing. So it's gonna be really interesting to see how this plays out, like through like the roster freeze date, at least through the trade date, which is like mid-April. So we've still got a while for all of this to kind of potentially go down. So I'm kind of excited to see how this goes. And the longer the season goes, like, is this going to be a Lee Wynn type of a thing? Like, where he just doesn't play for like half a year until the manager finally decides, okay, he's obviously not going to play for us. We're not going to use him. We've just been wasting it. Let's get some, you know, assets for it, and make the move. So, I think it's interesting how it's all played out. Nagbe is a really solid player, and was very instrumental in shoring up a lot of Atlanta United's deficiencies from year one into year two, which made them so dang good. I do think he would do a world of wonder in the midfield, though, for the Columbus Crew, and maybe even potentially out wide. So, you think of that kind of a that midfield there with, let's say, you know, you have Artur, Nagbe, and potentially Pipa Higuain. That's a really solid midfield that could potentially be played there. And even then, if you play him out wide, you know, it's better than what most of Columbus has out wide right now anyway. So, pay attention to this. This is kind of a lot of fun. I think it's I like it more for the sake of, like, awesome, we get some, like, nice MLS drama. That's a lot of fun to like, you know, speculate about and pay attention to and kind of keep refreshing stuff just to see what happens. But ultimately, you know, you hope it just gets resolved in the best way for all parties too.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Dan. You know, I think it's one metric by which I will be able to say soccer has made it or soccer has made progress in American sports is when you have players holding out like you see pretty much every single year. You know, the Le'Veon Bell situation with the Steelers. Now, I don't think it's going to be as extreme to the point where, you know, a guy's flat out holding out, not getting his money or, you know, not getting a year of service within the league or anything. But when guys are holding out saying, you know, I see myself as a certain value, you clearly have the capacity to pay me. And this is a league that is increasingly, with each CBA, is giving more power to the players. I'm going to take advantage of that for my own financial well-being and the betterment of my career, both financially and professionally. Then, you know, I think that's progress. I guess I'm seriously wondering where this is coming from, Dan, because like this is a, you know, like if you told Caleb Porter and Tim Bezbachenko, hey, do you want, you know, yes or no, would you prefer to have Darlington Nagbe on the squad? Yes. Do you immediately right now need Darlington Nagbe? My hunch is no. Arthur's great. Will Trapp is great. They've got Pete Baye-Quain. Like, I think they can survive right now in the Eastern Conference without Darlington Nagbe. Now, obviously, how much of that is, you know, the new ownership group coming in and then opportunities for spending and the front office player, people getting settled, getting, you know, getting, assessing what they have from a stat standpoint and then maybe going all guns blazing into the summer transfer window or then really starting to mold this team in the vision that they have next winter. But I don't know that they didn't inherit a team that you either for the sake of the fans, for the sake of the money, for putting butts in seats, for being competitive, for changing something up, need to splash, you know, $1 million if we're going by roughly the evaluation for what Darlington Nagbe was sold from the Portland Timbers, you know, a year and change ago today. You know, I don't know that they need that. You know, obviously Caleb Porter has, you know, would be in position to use Darlington Nagbe very well, given that, you know, they were successful at Akron together. They won MLS Cup together when they were both at the Portland Timbers. You know, maybe Nagbe has an affinity for Caleb Porter where maybe he thinks he's just, you know, new coach came in, Peter DeBoer, and Peter DeBoer just doesn't rate Nagbe in the way that he rates other midfielders. You know, Ohio is home as well for him, you know, going to school in Akron, so maybe it's that. You know, I not in a questioning sort of way of I don't believe you sort of a thing or this is a bad move by you, but from a human standpoint, I'm generally curious where this came about from Darlington Nagbe. Does he genuinely think that, you know, he's not going to make it with Atlanta United? Does he think, you know, oh, well, I've won two MLS Cups, I'm already at the age, and given the changes with the U.S. national team, nothing's going to be successful with the U.S. national team. Let me just be comfortable and happy for the remainder of my career and continue to get paid. And maybe he thinks that that's better and more secure and more stable with Caleb Porter at Columbus Crew living in Ohio than somewhere else, for example. So, you know, I also am kind of torn as like who has the cards because, again, Atlanta's stacked enough to where they don't absolutely need Darlington Nagbe. This isn't Joseph Martinez holding out of saying, make me the highest paid forward in the league or I'm not coming showing up to preseason. And then, so, you know, I don't know who's really pulling the strings at this point, and I don't know that Nagbe has a whole lot of the cards given that Columbus didn't immediately jump on this opportunity and Atlanta isn't freaking out one way or the other about either not paying Nagbe, guaranteeing him a starting spot, or immediately shipping him out to the destination of his choice. With that, Dan, we've got another 2 weeks worth of MLS jerseys released in the books. The LA Galaxy just came out with their Navy Knight one that I had generally positive things about. What jerseys have you been paying attention to? Which do you like, don't like, and which jerseys in particular do you really want to make fun of right now?
So I'm really sick and tired of like just these all white kits. They really suck. I'm done with it. The Minnesota United kit, whatever it was, like something like Snow White, and try to like make it all like hipster. No, it's a freaking plain white kit. It's boring as hell. Like, move on. Thank you for the lame ass secondary, Adidas. Move on. The one for FC Cincinnati, plain and freaking boring. None of the, I feel like secondary kits this year are like any interesting except for the Galaxy one. The Galaxy one is pretty cool. I like it. It is like, it reminds me of Manchester United. Remember when they had the, like the navy blue and black checker.
Yeah.
Like secondary or like, you know, like that's what it reminds me of a little bit. And it even kind of reminds me of their alternate from this year with the navy blue and the gold monochrome logo. But I dig the Galaxy's secondary so far. I kind of like RSL's. It's not like terrible, but it's not bad.
It looks like the printer broke.
Yeah, I know, freaking Trey. They should just like name it the Trey jersey and just leave it at that.
Yes,
I'm trying to think. I actually really like FC Cincinnati's primary, and I kind of dig Atlanta's primary, although it's hilarious that they've just branded themselves as the five stripes for 2 years, and now they're the seven stripes. And they're like, what do we do with the five stripe branding now? Like you literally can't do it. So it's kind of funny. And seeing Atlanta United fans freak out over like FC Cincinnati having the five stripe on theirs and it actually being like a pretty badass like setup on it. And then getting there, like, I think Rob Usry, who is a great follow on Twitter if you don't follow him, but said something about, like, it looks like an AC Milan flea market knockoff, kind of a jersey. And I kind of agree with that. And I think it's about right.
Yes, I see it.
But it's not terrible. Like, AC Milan jerseys are classy and always look solid. So, like, it's not a terrible thing. However, the whole situation is kind of funny with, Atlanta United now being the seven stripes. I'm trying to think of all the ones that have released recently. The one I like it. It's not like just purple. You kind of have the pattern thing. Although from TV, it's going to look like just purple, but I do like the subtle, kind of pattern set up on the front. That is interesting to me. And then what was the other one that came? There's another good one. The Quakes. The Quakes one is kind of growing on me, but I'm waiting for them to get a sponsor. I don't know. I still like top ones from this year so far that I've seen come out. I'd have to give a top three kit wise. Probably the Earthquake. No, not Earthquakes. I'd probably go Sportings. Cause I dig that one. I really like the FC Cincinnati primary as well. And then I'll throw in the, Philadelphia Union secondary. I really like that kit.
Yeah, I do like the Philadelphia Union secondary one, and I'm a big fan of teams getting a little creative as far as like what they do with the jock tag, and in particular, I think teams that do make a really good usage of like a secondary logo or component of the logo, like just the snake for the Philadelphia Union, I'd totally be okay if 1 year randomly they just decided we're just gonna make that the logo on our crest. So dig the snake. I really like the Portland Timbers one. We have with sort of the hoops with the two tones of the darker green and the lighter green. We haven't really seen that kind of creativity from the Portland Timbers kit. But Diego Valeri looks great in anything, but I feel like I would look great in that. Not that I'd look great compared to Diego Valeri wearing the exact same thing, but I like the Portland Timbers home kit. As I penned in an article for Last Word on Sports, Dan, I like the variation of the Galaxy going with their blue one. And for Galaxy fans who are mad about it or who say that it looks too much like the Smurfs one, and I'll agree that, the blues that they have used are very similar in the past and today, from the San Jose Earthquakes blue. Remember that, with so many MLS teams having the darker of the jerseys be their primary kit, the LA Galaxy get to wear the white with the sash for most of their road games. So basically the Galaxy's blue kit is basically a question of what do we want to wear in Open Cup? And what do we want to wear when we play our road games at Minnesota and at Vancouver? So if it's a kit they're only wearing five times, I'm okay with that. I actually saw it and I immediately thought of the old Montreal Impact, their third kit in the Micro DeVio era when they first debuted the vertical blue and black stripes, because you kind of have the two-tone blue, and I really like the pixelation that I think is fun and creative. I'll echo your point, Dan, that, any team that's coming out with a white kit, to me, that says that you're not creative and you can't actually pick a color. There is one club on the entire planet that can go with white, and a century ago, the king of Spain said, I am a supporter of you, I wear white, you can wear white, and then Real Madrid can get away with wearing white because they win a whole lot because the Real Madrid and because they've been wearing it forever. So That's my thoughts on that. Dan, it's time for us to actually get to pick-ems, and we'll be doing pick-ems for every single MLS-involved Champions League first leg for this week. All of these games will be streaming on Yahoo Sports. They will be on Univision Deportes on TV if you want to watch them in Espanol. And there's a whole bunch of streaming options you have, not just through YahooSports.com. But Dan, we'll begin chronologically. So we'll start Tuesday, the 19th. This will be at Independiente, Toronto FC heading down south at 8 p.m. Eastern. Dan, who you got and why?
Oh boy, I'm going to have to go with Toronto FC in this one. I'll say they squeak out a 2-1 win down in Independiente.
I'm going to agree with you. I'll say Jozy Altidore brace. He goes full beast. And I think the defense, you know, maybe has a little bit of a blip that ultimately gives the goal to Independiente, but they get better throughout the game. And then they're feeling better going into the second leg, given how their defense ended compared to where their defense started. We'll move on. Also on Tuesday, this will be at 10 p.m. Eastern, Guastatoya against Houston Dynamo. Dan, who you got and why?
Let's go with Houston Dynamo. Houston Dynamo winning 2-0 on this one.
Okay, I'm going to say Houston Dynamo by a score of 3-2. I think that Houston Dynamo are going to come out, be a little bit conservative. I think some of their defense will make some mistakes. Maybe we'll get a random red card, but ultimately Houston's going to go off from a counterattacking standpoint in the second half. Like Toronto, will feel good about the result, not so much the performance, but will feel better given the progress that they made during the game. Then we'll move on to Wednesday. This will be the only Wednesday game involving only Wednesday CCL game involving an MLS team down in the Dominican Republic, Atletico Pantoja against New York Red Bulls, 8 p.m. Eastern. Dan, who you got and why?
I'm going to go with New York Red Bulls in this one. You know, Atletico Pantoja, you know, it's a cool story. First Dominican team to make it this far, but they're a severe underdog and a severe minnow in this one. And to be honest, I wouldn't be shocked if like New York Red Bulls rolled out a second team and still won pretty handily. So I'll say 3-1. For the New York Red Bulls down in the Dominican Republic.
I'll say 3-0 to the New York Red Bulls. I agree with you, Dan. You know, I'd seriously question any club team from the Dominican Republic if you took their starting 11 and just gifted them to New York Red Bulls too. How many of those players walk into the starting 11? We'll probably see a little bit of a hybrid lineup, but I think Chris Armas is going to have this team very well prepared for this game and the playing surface that they'll be facing. Move on to Thursday, Dan. We'll start with the game that you'll be at, Sporting Kansas City, at Children's Mercy Park, taking on Toluca, 6 p.m. Eastern. Dan, who you got and why?
It's actually 8 p.m. Eastern. No, Sporting KC, Toluca. Toluca's been in a bad run of form recently in Liga MX. Just one draw in their last five games, no wins. They've been losing to some teams in Mexico that they shouldn't be losing to, considering their pedigree and some of the players that they have on their squad. So it'll be interesting. I think the way they qualified was solid, but they haven't been that good since that one year that they qualified. They've been kind of there, but not. I'm trying to think of a Salt. Who's a they're all Salt Lake, it feels like, since they were able to qualify for the tournament. This is all kind of like a year on or whatever. So it's all based on like a year ago's results in the last two editions of their Apertura and Clausura. They've been kind of RSL-ish, very like close to their playoff line and kind of upper tier mid table, but like not that great. I think Sporting Kansas City will take this one. It's going to be like miserably cold for the Toluca players, and I'm sure some of the Sporting Kansas City players as well, but a lot of them are much more used to it than Toluca is at playing in temperatures under freezing. So hopefully there's snow. Hopefully it's going to be a lot of fun. I think Sporting Kansas City will take this one. I'll go 2-0 that they beat Toluca, and it'll be a tough game for them. Toluca is a pretty well-disciplined team. They don't give up a whole lot of goals, but their goal scoring has been the main issue recently.
Cold weather is normally not conducive to offense in MLS, let alone in this tournament, Dan. So I think this will be a little bit of a slog. It might be a little bit of teams punting it back and forth in really simplified soccer, depending on the quality of the surface and how the wind chill, potential snow are affecting it. I think Sporting Kansas City ekes out one. So I think they'll win by a score of 1-0. And I'll say Johnny Russell, poning a fool from out wide, cutting inside and then scoring on his own. Then the last game involving an MLS team this week, week in CCL. Herediano hosting Atlanta United FC, 10 p.m. Eastern. Dan, who do you have, and who do you have, and why is it going to be the eight stripes?
Why is it going to be Atlanta? I'll give Atlanta a 2-1 win in this one. I actually think this will be probably one of the tighter, matchups in this first round. Herediano and the Costa Rican sides are usually pretty darn good. Atlanta, it'll be their first, like, highly competitive game, intense, road atmosphere. I think it'll be a bit of a tough result for them, but they'll be able to get it out just because of the quality that they have. So 2-1 to Atlanta United.
Retweet favorite. That does it for us, folks. Nan, it is time for last words. Where can people find you on the Twitter machine? And do you have any last words?
My last words is actually an appeal to our listeners. If you are interested in writing about the Canadian Premier League, we would like to start jumping into that. That is a goal. We do already have a couple of writers on board covering Canadian Premier League teams. However, the more the merrier. So we are looking for writers, even MLS, USL, NASL, if you are interested in writing. Come check out the website, click the link at the top of the page. Is right for us. You'll see there at lastwordonsoccer.com. We're looking for prospective writers. I know Matt as well as being on the editorial staff, at the site. We are always looking for writers and got people who are interested in writing about MLS, CPL, USL, you know, the Canadian national team, anything like that. So, check it out. That's my last words and that's my kind of appeal. You can follow me on Twitter at SperryDaniel94. Interact with me this week. It's funny. I was looking at our calendar and there was something that, you know, people invited us to do this week. And then I was like, oh no, it's the opening weekend of MLS. And I was actually like a week ahead. And I was really mad when I realized it's not the opening week of MLS. So, as we get closer to the opening week of MLS, the soccer is heating up and, I will definitely be up to chatting about it. So, join me on Twitter over there and we'll have a good conversation, but thanks for listening as always. And if you're interested in writing, apply.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Dan. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. Check out all of our content at lastwordonsoccer.com and at lastwordsc across all social media platforms. You can subscribe to Last Word Soccer Club Radio wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for LWS Radio, and then you'll find us and a whole bunch of other great stuff that Last Word on Sports in general puts out. Rate us, review us, share us on social media. That really helps us out, both us and then the site as a whole. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. Listeners, we'll see you next week where hopefully we're talking about 5 of 5 MLS teams in good position to head into CCL and then obviously starting to preview the 2019 Major League Soccer season. We'll see you then.